Tweet at Today SOR.
Lots of you are responding to the item about women in difficult relationships. In court, my friend was told, why complain? Pardon me. He hasn't beaten you since October. You got a good innings. I can't believe a judge would have said that, but however. And then another listener saying, I stayed because of fear of leaving, but I left because of the fear of staying became greater than the fear of leaving, says Maeve. And then on healthy eating, one last tweet, Catherine in Limerick saying, coconut sugar is the healthy alternative for sugar in cooking. Now, it was a week when the Dáil returned after the summer recess, with clear indications the budget and water charges will dominate proceedings over coming weeks. So, good news as well, though, for the government. It looks like the economy here could grow by 4.5% this year. Meanwhile, in Scotland, a stunning 84% of voters cast their ballots in the independence referendum, with the no side prevailing roughly 55-45. Back home, there were more allegations about penalty points being quashed. The former Justice Minister Alan Shatter unleashed his anger at GSOC again. And of course, there's a little football match, a big football match in Croke Park on Sunday. Two of them, in fact, Donegal versus Kerry at minor and senior. With me now, Fiach Kelly, political correspondent of the Irish Times, Cormac O'Hara of Airnegy and late debate here on Radio 1. Sarah Barden is political editor of the Irish Mirror, and journalist Johnny Craig is here. Johnny, you are here from Scotland, so you're first up. Are you happy with the outcome?
I'm relieved more than happy. I think it's probably a bit early for triumphalism, and it's not really the time to be triumphant either. I think the debates and the result and the whole political engagement of Scotland need to be celebrated. It was a great time for democracy, and with a turnout of that magnitude, it shows just how engaged the Scottish people, the Scottish electorate, were with the whole business. And this has been a 2-year campaign, so the arguments have although a lot was done very late on, people were able to set their stalls out quite early and prepare for a long and hard campaign. And the fact that we've got this result now means that there's still an awful lot to do. There's a huge amount that is now all over the place. In fact, either way, it would have been that way. Now the UK is intact, and it depends now what the Westminster government want to do as far as handing more devolved powers to Scotland, and also how to appease the majority, which would be the English voters, because they're now saying, well, you know, why Scotland has always been seen as a subsidised nation. How are we going to go from here?
Politics, Sarah Barden, seems to have been energised not just in Scotland but also throughout England and to a lesser extent maybe in Wales by this referendum. I'm wondering as well to what extent the fact that everybody between 16 and 18 were able to vote in this thing for the first time.
Well, I think it's a turnout that most governments could only dream of.
Provided they got the right outcome, of course.
84% people turned out. I mean, we've seen in previous referendum here that there's been vote turnouts of less than a third. So it was incredible to see the amount of people who turned out to vote. And as you said, younger people in particular between the age of 16 and 18 coming out in force. And as we know here, we're currently plotting a referendum to lower the voting age to 16, which hopefully will be held in April. So as Johnny said, a mild-mannered campaign up until maybe perhaps the last week or so.
Fiach, I think a lot of people who would be Labour supporters would be asking themselves across the water, God, why didn't we hold on to Gordon Brown, or could we have him back?
Yeah, it was a magnificent last 2 weeks from Gordon Brown. I think that Sunday Times poll really put the willies up everybody. They were one point, yes, was 1 point ahead. And ironically, it was YouGov last night, the same polling company who came out and called it, but that really galvanised it. Gordon Brown took it by the scruffy, came out and threw this home rule, this more muscular version of home rule on the table. Didn't give a damn what David Cameron, Nick Clegg or Ed Miliband said. That was it. And they all had to row him behind him. And then...
And he's the one man Alex Salmond wouldn't debate
he
against.
He is. And then, to top it off, during the week we had this barnstorming speech at the final rally in Glasgow. It's 30 minutes. It's on YouTube. I think he'd recommend looking it up if anybody has a spare 15 minutes. It was just spectacular. I was reading some of the English and British media...
Gordon Brown on YouTube, you say, yeah?
Yeah, Gordon Brown at Glasgow. It's a fantastic speech. Gordon Brown back to his best as he was in the 80s, marching in the hall, stalker in that big frame of his, hammering home the point. But it is interesting that they had to rely on him to come in and save it at the end of the day, that they couldn't get their act together themselves. And the modern Labour Party, Ed Miliband's Labour Party, had to bring him back out of the cupboard.
And Cormac, I say the relief, though, extends well beyond Downing Street and Westminster, right all over Europe, or certainly some significant parts of it.
Well, there are a number of significant elements here, Sean. I think Gordon Brown actually, ironically, did save the Tory bacon at the end of the day. But I think the fact that it was so close is down to political cynicism and political and disengagement by the public from the political establishment in Westminster or London. And this has resonance here. And also, as you say, throughout Europe, you have the rise of far-right parties in France, in Italy, in Denmark, even in Sweden at the earlier part of this week. And we have disengagement here, as Sarah says as well. The children's referendum, for example. On occasions, disengagement. The children's referendum, the turnout was something like 33%. Therefore, I think the Tory and Liberal Dem government in Westminster will be relieved. But as Martin Kettle in The Guardian said this morning, the SNP will be back.
Is it because the high turnout is because the choice was so fundamental and so binary? It wasn't like our children's referendum, say, which is kind of hard to understand. And even the British AV referendum a few years ago, dreadfully low turnout. I think the addition of 16 and 7-year-olds voting played into it. But I think the fundamental nature of the question was a real clincher for people. They wanted to go out and vote. I think that may have been the main
factor. I think it was the nature of the question, the binary nature of it. And also the fact that it went down to identity. And at the end of the day, there's something primeval, there's something base, fundamentally base, and I say that not in a pejorative sense, about raising a question about somebody's identity. And actually, the BBC this morning had something very interesting on their website in their analysis of this. They put the no vote down partly, they say, in part as a result of resurgence of Britishness. They say the number of people living in Scotland who chose British as their national identity rose from 15% in 2011 to 23% in 2014. Now, 23% who describe themselves as British in Scotland is not huge, in my opinion.
Yeah, and a third of Scots, I think I might have been looking at the same page on the web as yourself, Cormac. One third of Scots feel equally Scottish and British, so they didn't want to lose that, I suppose. But coming closer to home back here, the Dáil back, Sarah, the water charges are starting to be imposed now in about a fortnight at least. That's when the clock will start ticking, and again, it's something that is still high on the political radar.
Well, as you say, 2 weeks to go till we're going to have to start paying for water. We also are just a number of weeks away from a by-election as well. So in 2 weeks away from a by-election.
Two by-elections.
But we should point out that one of them is in Roscommon, where 36,000 people have boiled water notices on their water. And so Fianna Fáil seized on that opportunity in the Dáil this week, asking questions as to whether or not those people should have to pay for their water. I think it's going to dominate Dáil proceedings for the next couple of weeks. And, you know, as you mentioned, but the budget is also up there. But the more that we talk about the budget, the less people forget that water charges are a significant part of that budget. I mean, Brendan Howlin has said that we will have a neutral budget, but we will have a neutral budget because of the full year of property tax and water charges. And, you know, that can't be forgotten by people.
Things seem to be coming right, Johnny Craig, for the government here. And it's going to be a difficult time, I think, particularly for Fianna Fáil. And even though they are being described as the favourites of the Roscommon by-election, Sarah was just talking about, because of the fact that the days of hardship seem to be coming to an end.
Well, that's the thing. How do they create an argument in favour of the themselves when they were presiding at the time when everything crashed? And they left the new government with the pieces to pick up. Now that that's actually happening, then who are people going to thank and to put their faith in for the future? And as far as I can see, I mean, at the moment with Ireland's economic recovery, especially bucking the trend in the Eurozone, here just
easy,
looks
Johnny,
like
easy, Johnny. Easy, we've heard that before. We're too early.
But the thing is, I'm not at the moment being overly optimistic about it. But in as much as you can be, at the moment things are looking good, and we have reason to be optimistic and to look forward. And when it comes down to elections, that's basically how people vote. Are things good? Are things getting better? If so, then I'm going to keep the same people in place.
Maybe Enda Kenny Cormack should go for the slogan, a lot done, more to do.
Well, actually, I had to laugh there because Johnny says, are they going to go with the crowd that left us with the crash or the destruction, or the crowd who are now pointing the way forward? But Micheál Martin of Fianna Fáil was quick to point out that he left this current government with the blueprint, or the former, the last government left this government with the blueprint pointing the way forward. But it's going to be interesting to see really and truly how the public will view it. But one important point here, Sean, it's okay to talk about the economic figures as we saw them yesterday, 7.7% of an increase in GDP until June. But really and truly, we need years of consistent growth of that nature to undo the damage or to heal the wounds that have been caused by social deprivation, homelessness, a lack of investment into social services and services like mental health that are badly needed by the trauma caused by the years of austerity and fiscal consolidation in this country. We need years of consistent growth of that nature before we can really talk of any type of renewal.
And there is plenty of scope still for opposition to really hammer the government on those kind of issues that Cormac's talked about.
I think there is, but I do agree with you, Sean. I think this recovery that's taking hold really puts Fianna Fáil in a bad position, that Sinn Féin will always strike to the left and will attack Labour from that way and will strike a more populist position. Fianna Fáil attempting to carve out a role for himself as the more responsible opposition. But if you're in Leinster House yesterday when these economic figures came out, you couldn't see a government deputy. Their smiles from ear to ear. Fianna Fáil glum, down. On top of that, you had a strong performance from Joan Burton against Mary Lou MacDonald Nadal. And the real temperatures, a few short months ago after local elections, it was the perceived wisdom that this government hasn't got a hope in hell of making it back into office. This week, people were going, look at the figures, and they're now wargaming. Well, Fine Gael can get between 50 to 55 seats. If Labour get back up to their historical 20, it's not totally beyond its possibility. You're there near the magic 78 mark now, which is the newer total.
I think people, that's suggesting that perhaps it's going to be an easy path for the government, and that's probably a little bit misleading because, you know, after the economic figures were produced yesterday, and yeah, they were good, Michael Noonan promised that there wouldn't be an end to austerity, and he promised that there wouldn't be a return to boom and bust policies. So he's basically laying out that, you know, the good times are not back. We're still going to have
But he was only doing that, Sarah, I think, because they spoke or misspoke earlier on at the tail end of the summer. They were talking almost about a giveaway budget. Now I think that the genie is out of the bottle because since that talk, people are expectant. And people are sick and tired of years of austerity, so they need that. They feel that they need something back.
I do think Irish water, come back to the original point, is the big thing that could come back and kick them. Because bear in mind, the government and the Taoiseach put out this figure of €240 during this year. People have kind of accepted that that's average what I'm paying. Most people won't be paying that. So if you are giving back an extra 5 or 10 in your pay packet in October's budget, but then you get a bill for 500 or 600 quid in your door for water, that'll make people look again. And I think water is the huge issue that's going to dominate for the end of this government's
Sarah,
term.
Sarah, I'm not sure, I don't know whether you were there or not, but Fiacre made an interesting point about Joan Burton versus Mary Lou. Could that be one of the star turns of the new Dáil term?
Well, I was sitting beside Fiacre on the press gallery yesterday when it happened, and we thoroughly enjoyed the sparring between Mary Lou and Joan Burton.
Really?
It was fascinating to watch. I mean, Mary Lou was asking the Minister for Social Protection about water charges and also about the recent MABS report. And as Joan Burton tried to reply, Mary Lou was like, yes, yes, yes. And Joan Burton stopped talking and said, oh, sorry, just the deputy have something interesting to say. She's probably, Mary Lou MacDonald's probably one of the strongest politicians in Leinster House, and it's very hard to take her down, but it seems like Joan Burton may just be the person who might do that.
It's fascinating. I remember during the Labour leadership election, there was a radio debate between just the pair of them, and they went at it hammer and tongs. And I actually thought Mary Lou came out the better of that particular exchange. But in a scenario in the Dáil where it's more structured, you have to obey what the Ciarán Cóirle says, I think perhaps Joan Burton would be slightly more able for Mary Lou MacDonald. It is going to be fascinating, the two of them going at it for the next 18 months.
Well, now that's going to be something we'll have to keep an eye on. If I'd known it was that good, I'd have been saying to the guys upstairs, get us some clips, please. But however, that will say something we will do another day. The man who hasn't gone away, Alan Shatter.
Well, I think Alan has proven himself to be a man with a grind to axe. Yesterday, or Wednesday he launched an attack on GSOC. And it was quite an interesting debate, because just before he took to his feet, he actually had a private conversation with the Justice Minister, Frances Fitzgerald, before standing to his feet and attacking her for not pushing GSOC to publish their report on the leak into the alleged surveillance at the GSOC offices. And it was quite ironic as well, some of the points that he made. If you remember, when he was in office and the report appeared in the Sunday Times by John Mooney, the security firm Veramis had carried out the report. He carried out his own report to check the findings of the Veramis report, and it was a Ritz report. And when he appeared before the Public Oversights Committee, he promised that he would publish that report, and he never did. So he can't talk about transparency and accountability when he didn't do it in office.
I don't hold, obviously, a candle for any politician, but does he raise a reasonable question in relation to a breach of security that Judge Cook pointed out at the GSOC office? Judge Cook, I think, said there was a breach of security, there was a leak to the Sunday Times, couldn't find the source of it. Now, it's in all our interests as a society to find out if the integrity of that office is in any way impugned. And if it is, I don't know, but I think it may be a reasonable question given we've all gone through. And I think we need some kind of a public utterance or statement from GSOC on the matter, simply to clear.
Yes, and just because Alan Shatter doesn't suffer from a lack of self-esteem or didn't hesitate from clobbering his opponents in the Dáil, that doesn't mean he's not entitled to state his case for fair procedures.
No, that, I exactly agree with you. And I think if you go back to even his previous speech in the Dáil, when he was a mere humble backbencher before the summer recess, he launched the Geeran report, and he also had a point there, because Sean Geeran, that report effectively made Alan Shatter resign from his position as Minister of Justice. He was never interviewed as part of that process before the report was actually published. He feels very sore about that too. That's gone through the
courts.
Does
he feel sore enough to turn on Enda Kenny about it?
He already has. He's already launched a High Court challenge against the findings of it.
But so, there are things that Alan Shatter could tell us that would put Enda Kenny in a lot of trouble. I don't think he does. I think that there is a lot of annoyance on the government front benches about what Alan Shatter is doing. The first one he launched during the summer, I remember speaking to him that night, went, "Would he just go away?" He's not going to go away, but I don't think it will push him too far to actually become a real hassle for Enda Kenny. I think he might just be more of an annoyance rather than
I think
trouble.
Just finally on that point, it'll come down to this following question: will the public or the body politic be willing to grapple on an ongoing basis with this question again at the behest of Alan Shatter? And I suspect possibly not.
Okay, well, that's one there that's maybe on the back burner, but that doesn't mean it won't come to the boil again, I suppose.
Plenty of time before the general election.
But again, another associated issue, obviously, is penalty points, and that's one that's bubbled up one more time, Sarah.
Yes, I actually spoke to Maurice McCabe this week.
The whistleblowing Garda Sergeant
Maurice McCabe, who was contacted by a number of senior cops who had witnessed practices that the government and the Garda Síochána had promised to end over the last number of months. And he met with senior Gardaí, and they've asked him to help their investigation over the next week. And it's my understanding that he believes that they will finally get to the bottom of this problem. And he's been praising the Garda Commissioner Noreen O'Sullivan, or Interim Garda Commissioner Noreen O'Sullivan, for her handling of the situation. But this is far from over, and I think the public need an end to this controversy. As we all know, there's more trouble down the line for An Garda Síochána with the findings of the of Justice Niall Fennelly's report to come. So this penalty points thing has been dragging on for 2.5 years.
I suppose
it needs to come to an end.
A lot depends, and there was a lot of attention focused on this, Fiac, about the timescale and the timeline, that everything was supposed to be cleaned up as and from June. Now, what we don't really know, or what we're not fully sure about, is whether the if you like, the wrongful erasing of points continued after the June point, or did what the latest revelations about inappropriate removal of points or getting rid of them, did that predate the crackdown?
I think Sergeant McCabe's complaint was that it did, that we were told in June that there would be one centralised unit dealing with all these issues, and three officers would be kind of assessing what points should be quashed or not. I think Sergeant McCabe's point is that even since then, that has gone on. And he claims that people he had identified as quashing points repeatedly are still doing so, and it hasn't had much of an effect since June. So I think that is his main bone of contention, that we were promised things would change and they haven't, and now he's moved forward with
And what's really interesting in the last week, Cormac, is the fact that rather than treat him with suspicion or as some sort of an outcast, the new regime seems to be saying, look, come in and explain to us why this has gone wrong.
Well, they made that mistake for long enough, didn't they? Treating him with suspicion, closing him off. Now there's supposed to be a sea change. But in ways, if the practice of cancelling penalty points, if that did continue, even post the new regime, it's no surprise in a sense, because it was an ingrained, deep-seated part of Garda culture. That's just a fact. Now, if you read any management textbook in the world, it'll tell you that if it's part of the culture, it's part of the norms, it's passed on from senior officers to junior ranks. And to change that, you need management buy-in, top-level buy-in and junior rank buy-in to change. And also, that needs to be done on an ongoing basis. And has that transformation happened in An Garda Síochána? I'm not sure.
But it is possible. Experience would have shown us, I think, Johnny, for instance, that things like, you know, the smoking bans, drink driving, which were common enough practices, people would smoke pretty much anywhere and everywhere. I mean, the notion, for instance, I think it's coming in across the road in UCD, that the entire campus, not just hospitals, but would be smoke-free, you know, in the coming months. It shows that people, if a lead is given from the top in an organisation, things can change.
Exactly. And I think when you're trying to deal with things that people have done, and in some ways it's a bit like working practices in older institutions like on post, where you get, you know, the draconian measures that are always coming in and people trying to protect themselves first and foremost. Yes, of course people can change anything they want. I mean, the smoking ban that came in Scotland, for instance, went far over and above what had been done here, and believe me, Scotland were a nation of smokers, and when you can achieve something like that, then it's certainly worth going after.
It's who leads the change, I suppose, is another aspect, and we still don't know who is going to be appointed as the full-time Garda Commissioner. Noreen O'Sullivan, I'm sure, has applied for that job. That process is underway, and the Garda, I think the rank and file Garda, would have to have faith in who leads the change in their organisation, and that's a big call that has to be made in the coming months as well.
And I suppose the thought that you can no longer get away with it would concentrate minds as well. Look, we leave that one there just in a couple of minutes that we have left. The big game on Sunday. You're smiling, I suppose. You probably expected that you would be there with a blue shirt and possibly a flag.
Unfortunately, you know, we were reminiscing. It was three years ago this week that Stephen Cluckson latched that point over the bar that we won the All-Ireland in 2011. But no, unfortunately not Donegal versus Kerry this weekend. It's going to be a fascinating game. Personally, I think Kerry might shade it. If they can get the grips of Michael Murphy, I think they might just do it. I think something about me says that Kerry are going to do it.
Sarah?
Well, I'm from Louth, Sean, so we haven't made it to Crow Park in a long, long time. And the last time we've been
and
there...
And you were robbed as well the last time you were there in the final.
So we're still sore from that, so I can only imagine how Fiac and the rest of the Dubs are feeling. I will be going for Donegal this weekend.
It's not a democratic process.
This weekend, and I think they might just nick it, but either way, it's going to be an absolute cracker of a game.
I can't wait, Cormac.
Well, I have colleagues in Rady and the Gaeltacht, obviously from the Gaeltacht in Kerry and the Gaeltacht in Tyrconnell, so you can cut the tension with a knife. It's like the Cold War on the Western Seaboard, Sean, with intermittent rain obviously coming in from the west. I also have a father-in-law from Valentia Island in Kerry, so I should opt for Kerry, or else I'll never be let into that house again. But I think the invincibility of Donegal is hard to get over, but you can never write Kerry off.
Well, you could say the other way around as well.
Yeah.
And as somebody said, they do have 36 titles at their back, but they're only bringing one team to Dublin. That's the other point.
Darragh O'Shea made a good point in his Irish Times column the other day as well. As you mentioned at the top of the show, Sean, it's the same billing in the minor final. And he said, like, you know, we might not think the minor final is the big curtain raiser, but if the crowd, if whoever wins the minor final, if it's Donegal or it's Kerry, those supporters are going to be up for it. They'll be even more up for it than for the senior game.
That was evident the day of the semi-final as well, when the Donegal Miners beat the Dubs. Cormac, if you get the gift of bi-location or something, you're doing Cormac like a Cuig or an G, and then you're coming back a couple of hours in Yishin to do a late debate.
That's right. It's one of my many talents, bi-location. We're in planning for daily Rady on the Gaeltacht today, in planning starting next Tuesday for the late debate. Tune in, it'll be fantastic. We can only make one promise, Sean. Superb radio.
Well, exactly. You know, in the best traditions, we leave it there. Sarah Barden of the Mirror, also Cormac O'Hara of RTE, Regent of Gaeltacht and Radio 1, Johnny Craig, a Scot living in Ireland, Fee Kelly, political correspondent of the Irish Times. Time for one last text. Tom in Dublin, 16. Johnny Doohan is Ireland's master craftsman with lyrics. Long may he continue the voyage.